Between vacations, errands, and everyday summer chaos, sticking to your health goals can be tough. Luckily, Thrive Market does the hard work for you. We're the online healthy grocery store that cuts out the junk ingredients and delivers high-quality groceries right to your door. From low-sugar beach snacks to organic grill night staples, no matter your health goal, we make shopping healthy a breeze. Go to thrivemarket.com/get started for 30% off your first order and a free $60 gift.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome Victor Davis Hanson, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, writing most recently at American Greatness about the American campus, university and college, private and public, all together now. The university campus, the college campus, is profoundly different than the one I left in the 20th century. Victor, a very good evening to you. It's all one party now, one great big party, not even pretending anymore that there's another point of view on the campus. Do we know how this happened before we get to the counter to the cancel culture and to the idea that free speech is unnecessary? How did the university get taken over by the progressives? Good evening to you.
Good evening. I think one thing is that what in real dollars 30 or 40 or 50 years ago, these elite universities that are leading this progressive long march through our institutions, they had endowments of $3 or $4 billion, John. But now, you know, they're $40, $30, $20 billion. So they have enormous amounts of, I should say, institutional fat to hire administrators. And that's the people who are sort of in loco parentis, counselors, diversity, equity, and inclusion czars. They're everywhere. We have, on average in the United States, one administrator for one faculty member. And that's because of the, they couldn't do it if they didn't have the money. And then the second thing was, we gave them this federally backed student loan program. And that was a blank check for them to raise their rates higher than the rate of inflation. And now we have 45 million kids that owe $1.7 trillion. And it makes them very bitter. They're anguished. They're angry. They take 6 years to graduate. They don't marry. They don't have children. They don't buy homes. They don't buy cars. It's traditional stimuli to conservative or traditional responsibilities. So you've got an angry, indebted student body, and then you've got a privileged elite university that can never be subject to the consequences of their crackpot ideology, and it's really warped the whole university experience. And it shares a lot of affinities in the globalized world with professional sports, the Beltway New York corridor media, big foundations on the left. And what's happened is a lot of these people who were in insurance, Silicon Valley, entertainment, media, they got a 7 billion person audience. So the amount of money was just staggering that went into entertainment, universities, media, it's corporate world, Wall Street, and they're all connected now, like a Borg. And they don't represent a majority of the population by any means, but they have all of the levers of influence as we recognize them.
The National Review Online, one of your colleagues, your critic, wrote up the Yale Trust Board of Trustees recently, and I had never paid attention to the Board of Trustees at any particular university, but it was striking to learn consistently Silicon Valley or big media, Silicon Valley or big media or a conjoining of the two, Comcast, for example, represented on the board. And these are people who are devoted to one particular party. We know this. That's fine. But there's no attempt to mediate this at the board level. Now, I don't know that immediately translates into the administration. It appears to. Do they note that there are no Republicans or conservatives or libertarians in the room? Is that an issue or a conversation for them at the administration level or the trustee level, to your understanding?
No, not at all. And it involves class, too. Unless somebody is a professional minority, meaning a minority of a professional classes that's not a billionaire or a multimillionaire, otherwise they don't have anybody of the middle classes. They don't want a truck driver. They don't want a small business owner. They don't want anybody that doesn't have clout to an either legal or political or financial clout. This is all very ironic because, of course, they're so progressive and they're so prone to virtue signaling, and yet these are the most pampered, elite, leisured people in the world. And I think that's very important. The answer is in part as well your first question, how did they get this way? When the left got so wealthy of these coastal global enclaves down the east and west coast, you know, universities, corporate boardrooms, headquarters, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, I don't think the left was quite equipped with it, that they became what they told us was always what was wrong with America. And in compensation, because nobody's going to give up their money, you know, Mark Zuckerberg's not going to say, you know what, I'm taking too much of the planet's resources, so I'm stopping work right now in my 57,000 square foot home in Hawaii. He's not going to do that. So they compensate psychologically. And we've talked about that before in a medieval sense of indulgence and penance. And they say, you know what, I feel really guilty about all this leverage and power I have, you know, the Bill Gates, the Jeff Bezos, the Mark Zuckerbergs, the Google bunch. But I am going to, in the abstract, be very hard left. I'm going to talk about equity, 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 inclusion, diversity, racism, systematic. And maybe, just maybe, I'll feel much better about my privilege by, you know, fobbing it off on people who don't have it and calling them privilege, i.e., a working white truck driver in Indiana. And then maybe the revolution, I'll be like a Kerensky or part of the Mensheviks. I can cut a deal, or the czarist aristocrats who thought they could cut a deal with a hard left. And I think maybe they're kind of shocked right now, John, when you look at the Biden tax proposal, inheritance tax, income, corporate taxes. Maybe they think they can cut a deal or their trust lawyers can get around it, but they never thought that these woke nostrums were going to apply to themselves.
There is a group on campus that might lead a challenge to the ratios. You note that only 30% of the faculty are tenure-tracked, meaning their jobs are secure, and so are the benefits of having chairs. 70% are contingent faculty, adjunct faculty, I think they call them. They're elbowed aside. They're a second class or third class. Are they in revolt anywhere? Do they object to what's going on?
Privately, yes, they're furious. And I'm speaking as somebody who was a part-time teacher at $700 a month for 2 years. And then I was only a temporary lecturer for another year. I know what it's like. I married to someone who was a part-time teacher for 10 years before getting a full position. But the problem, John, is that when they go teach at this campus, they drive over to that campus, or they go into the dean's office or the chair's office and say, can you give me 3 classes? Come on, please, please. I need this. I need, because they get paid by the unit. It's, you know, it's very unequal. They versus the tenure class, they can't be vocal because they don't have any job protection. They have a word for them they've invented called contingent faculty. And it's contingent on what the tenure track elite says. And so one of the criterion is that you're woke. But they see a part-time teacher who was illiberal, they feel, in one of their class assignments. This is like a big fat goose at Christmas for your tenured faculty. Say, we can fire this person. This person has no power, has no money, no friends. Let's go mob this person. I've seen it happen a lot. And so they do that a lot. So the result is our contingent faculty, they make the necessary ideological adjustments, at least publicly, to make sure their 1-year contracts or 2-year contracts give them enough sustenance. And we should either get rid of tenure and make it a free-for-all, and everybody could, you know, have a 3 to 5 year contract, and if they didn't fulfill it, scholarship, teachings, university service-wise, they'd be gone. Or we should allow these people to have tenure as contingent faculty. But it's an archaic system that's 2-tier, and it's highly ironic when the faculty lounge is very critical of Walmart or the so-called inequalities in the American capitalist workplace, when we know that pay and salary inequality is most manifest at a university campus. We talk about, you know, discrimination and this and that, but what we never talk about is, if you teach an English class and you are a contingent faculty, you can make 1/4 of what a full top step professor makes for the same class.
What we have then is a university that appears to be, or it represents itself as not self-aware of its own monolithic presence. Is that correct, Victor? They don't know what's happened to them?
They don't know what's really happened to them, but if you talk to them, and I do sometimes, they're very self-confident and sure. They believe that they took a disinterested, empirical, inductive university that was not sensitive to being woke or what had to be done, and they've galvanized it. It's an agent of change now. It's a multi-service institution. It's turning out soldiers for the revolution. It's part of the fervor that's necessary to make an equitable society. But do they ever ask themselves, why are the test scores declining of people who were admitting, you know, most schools? No, they just throw out the test. Or why do people who graduate have less communication, oral, written skills than they did 10 years ago? No, we're never going to have an exit test to adjudicate that. Why are the assignments requiring less work than they did before? No, they're not going to talk about that. They're going to say, we look more diverse. We look like America. We do this. We do that. But ultimately, this counts, because we know it used to be a joke, John. We'd say, well, we're going to throw out meritocracy, but no one would ever throw out meritocracy when it's a question of a nuclear plant operator or a control tower operator or a pilot. And now we're learning that, in fact, all of those occupations are being subject to woke racial and ethnic gerrymandering. So United has said that half their slots for young pilots will be determined on the basis of race. So university, every idea now in America that's suspect seems to have originated in the campus court packing, get rid of the Electoral College, admit new states, change the voting laws. These are all can be found in journal articles in the law and political science departments of most universities 5 or 6 years ago.
There's a new book, and we're going to talk about it when we come back, The Dying Citizen, How Progressive Elites, Tribalism, and Globalization Are Destroying the Idea of America, by Victor Davis Hanson. We're going to talk about it in terms of what happens when universities no longer ask questions about the world and just assume that you're one team. What happens is the big lie. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.